For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. A new poll has given Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton an 11-point lead over her rival Donald Trump. The NBC Wall Street Journal findings come in the wake of a leaked tape recording of the Republican candidate boasting about groping women. Kevin McAleese has more from Washington.
This is Clinton's biggest lead in a national poll over the real estate tycoon since last September. Polling was conducted immediately after the release of an audio tape which captured Donald Trump making sexually aggressive remarks against women. And there was more for the GOP to worry about, as 49% said they wanted Democrats to control Congress, compared with 42% who wanted the Republicans to maintain control.
Meanwhile, Washington's top Republican lawmaker says he will no longer publicly defend Donald Trump. Speaker of the House of Representatives Paul Ryan says he will instead focus on defending Republicans fighting to keep their seats in Congress. Nina Maria Potts reports.
After cancelling a Trump campaign rally over the weekend, Speaker Paul Ryan says he'll no longer campaign for the Republican candidate and won't try to defend him. But after some consideration of the fallout of a lewd video in which Trump discusses using his celebrity status to get away with sexual assault, Ryan has decided not to withdraw his endorsement, but instead will focus on helping Republicans defend seats in Congress, which have in many cases been made vulnerable because of party association with Donald Trump.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon says a massive response is needed in Haiti after it was struck by Hurricane Matthew. The storm left approximately 900 people dead and completely demolished entire towns in the country. The United Nations has issued an emergency appeal for $120 million in aid. Ban Ki-moon said in total, at least 1.4 million people are in need of help. The Nobel Prize for Economics has been awarded to UK-born Oliver Hart and Finland's Bengt Holmström for their work on contract theory. The pair will share a prize of just under $1 million. FSN's Ollie Barrett has the details.
The Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences says the work by the pair has helped the understanding of real-life contracts and institutions and has laid an intellectual foundation for policy on issues like bankruptcy law and political constitutions. They worked separately, based in the US, coming up with systems to work out whether public sector workers should be on fixed salaries and whether providers of public services should be state or privately owned. They beat other frontrunners to the prize, including the new chief economist at the World Bank, Paul Romer, and Olivier Blanchard, the former chief economist at the IMF. Ollie Barrett, London.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you, Rebecca Foster. Hello to you. Here's a question for you, and I'll be posing this to my guest Wayne Madsen this hour. Do you really think that Republican power brokers are only now just finding out that tapes exist? Tapes purporting to show Donald Trump talking about groping women? You see, somebody strongly resembling and sounding very much like me said to you a long time ago, in this galaxy, that Donald Trump was a stalking horse, a plant, a shill. It's all a joke, isn't it? Let's get on with it.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England, this is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
And I'm going to kick things off this Monday by saying happy birthday to Dawn Miller. Happy birthday, Dawn. Good stuff. What is it? Is it the 10th? It is the 10th of October 2016. Monday's show, the first of the week. Hope you had a lovely weekend. Mine was very relaxing, apart from Friday, when I went to see the Buzzcocks, who are absolutely outstanding at the Albert Hall in the great city of Manchester. Quite wonderful were the Buzzcocks. So it's been good. Got a lively show lined up for you. Coming up in the first hour, as I just mentioned, the great Wayne Madsen joins me to talk about the debates last night. But we We're not just going to talk about the debate, because you know all about the debate and what's really going on. I'm going to ask Wayne Madsen, how can those on the... Oh, I don't know. I don't want to say on the right of the independent media. How can those in the American independent media support Donald Trump? How can they not know that Republican power brokers, as I said to you a little bit earlier on, a couple of minutes ago, in fact, how could they believe that these guys wouldn't have known that tapes and video and audio was out there showing Donald Trump in the light that we've seen in the last few days, and that eventually Hillary Clinton wouldn't run away with the election, as was predicted on this programme over a year ago? We'll talk more about that with Wayne Madsen this hour, and one or two other things besides. And coming up in the second hour, Madeleine Hoffman joins the show. Now, I'm really, really happy about that. Had a chat with her today. Seems like a lovely lady. She's the director of New Jersey Peace Action. In fact, she's the executive director. And she's been an activist, a peace activist, for over 16 years. Now, this summer, she went to Syria with a delegation. And I saw a press conference last week of a number of people who went on that delegation to Syria talking about their experiences there. And Madeleine was speaking very passionately about what she believes is the root cause of the problems in Syria. And, of course, much of what she had to say, we'd have a lot of sympathy with, those of us who produce this programme. So Madeleine Hoffman joins me in the second hour. I posted that video, by the way, of Madeleine today. Not today, but Madeleine some weeks ago. I posted it today on Facebook. If you want to check it out and check out what she had to say, you can do that between now and her coming on. But I'd wait until you hear her a bit later on. She's terrific. We're broadcasting live on Alternate Current Radio, on Fab Radio International here in the UK. Syndicated, of course, on those networks, and davidicke.com as well. Do check out davidicke.com/headlines. Had a chat with David this morning. He was due to be in Bucharest in 3 weeks' time. You might know now, if you're on davidicke.com today, that the venue has pulled the event, effectively. And David's team hasn't been notified as to why that is. Now, I didn't need to tell him today, but I did mention it. The tour has been such a huge success to this point. He would, of course, not be surprised at all that there would be some roadblocks and some interference along the way. Now, a couple of thousand tickets have already been sold by the organiser of that event in Bucharest, so it's obviously a huge pain in the arse for everybody involved. But the venue has pulled the event and hasn't yet explained to David's team why they've done that. However, the organiser there is trying to reschedule for May. So those of you who listen to this programme in Romania, and we have listeners in Romania, David will stay with davidicke.com and theworldwidewakeup.com, and you'll find out where that has been rescheduled to, and all the details about that. It's Monday, so following me, we will have an energy healing meditation from the lovely Kim Hutchison. It is entitled today, Receiving Your Soul's Desires for Your Most Powerful Life Path. It's an energy healing meditation that follows this programme at the end of it. I nearly gave the time there, you see. At the end of it. All right, at the end of it. Moving on, remember, you can tweet the programme at Richie Allen Show is my Twitter handle. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Twitter is best. Email is temperamental. Twitter is best, but I will check the emails. In fact, I can't get into it now for some reason. But I do recommend Twitter because it's quick and it's instant at Twitter. No, it isn't at Twitter. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Let's move along. Let's move along. Carnage in Yemen. Well, Reuters have reported today, and this is interesting, that the United States government is concerned that it could be implicated in potential war crimes in Yemen. And that's because of the US support for a Saudi-led coalition air campaign. Now, Reuters news agency says they've obtained official documents which shows that government lawyers advised the US government it might be considered a co-belligerent under international law. The Obama administration has continued to authorize weapons sales to Saudi Arabia, as you know, despite the warnings last year. And this weekend, you might know this, you might not, an airstrike on a funeral hall in Sana'a killed over 140 people. The Saudi-led coalition denied responsibility for the attack, but Washington said it would review its support to better align with US principles, values and interests, whatever that means. The documents detailing US government concerns about the civilian casualties and the potential legal implications for US military personnel were obtained by Reuters under the Freedom of Information Act, and those documents date from May last year to February of this year. And one of them is very interesting because it quotes a State Department official as telling human rights groups back in October of last year that he believed coalition strikes were not intentionally indiscriminate, but rather result from a lack of Saudi experience with dropping munitions and firing missiles. The lack of Saudi experience is compounded by the asymmetric situation on the ground, where enemy militants are not wearing uniforms and are mixed with civilian populations, said the official. This is monumental BS, because British military officials have been stationed in and around control rooms working with the Saudi military, as was reported on this programme late last year, to ensure that the Saudis are doing it properly. So it's another lie. Interesting. All of that coming at the time, or at the same time, that the French government has said that it will ask the International Criminal Court to investigate alleged war crimes committed by Russia and Damascus in Aleppo. It comes after Moscow vetoed a French draft resolution at the UN Security Council saying it was aimed at protecting terrorists. And Vladimir Putin, the Russian president, will be visiting France later this month, in fact, in a week's time. And all of this was going on, and the Czech president, Milos Zeman, he said this weekend that the US presence in Syria is illegitimate. Of course it is. It's a violation of international law. More on Syria and what's really going on there a little bit later on. Now, this will annoy you. The Israeli ambassador to the UK, a guy called Mark Regev, who grew up in Australia, you might know that, he's been writing in The Guardian about how the left has been infiltrated by anti-Semites. Yes, he cited the Chakrabarty report as evidence of this. That's Shami Chakrabarty, who was commissioned by the Labour Party itself to check out if there was any evidence that there was endemic racism in the Labour Party. Now, the Chakrabarty report said there wasn't. And yet Mark Regev has been writing in The Guardian, in fact, I think it was published on Friday, about how the Chakrabarty report shows evidence that there is infiltration going on by anti-Semitic people of left-wing politics in the United Kingdom. Now, he's a vile, hostile little man, is Mark Regev. He was on Channel 4 News yesterday. Here he is dealing with the very question we ask a lot on this programme. Is genuine and fair criticism of Israel being construed by the Israeli government as anti-Semitism? Have a listen.
But I mean, a huge amount has changed in the past 80 years, and there are many people, Jewish people, non-Jewish people, people within and without the Labour Party, who are very angry about the way the government of Israel has acted over the last two decades. And many of those people argue that any criticism at all of Israeli government is shut down by people accusing them of being anti-Semitic.
I would totally reject that, because we're not talking about Israeli government policy. If you want, Jackie, to have a discussion about Israeli government policy, I'm very happy to do that. But people can debate Russian government policy, French government policy, Italian government policy, but no one denies the very right of those countries to exist. Yet some people say that my country has no right to exist, that the Jewish people have no right to national self-determination. What's going on here?
But what about the argument that they feel they cannot criticise Israel as a state without being called anti-Semitic? It's a way of shutting down debate.
I don't think that's true. I think it's a straw man. The Israeli public, the Israeli press, the Israeli parliament, we have vibrant debates about different policies, what is right, what is wrong, which policy is effective, which policy works, which policy doesn't work. Our parliament mirrors your parliament that way. But if someone stands up and says the Jewish people have no right to national self-determination, that the Jewish state has no right to exist, not in any borders, that is something else. If people focus an irrational hatred on Israel, what's that all about?
I've said this time and time again on this programme, and I'm a keen student of history, as you know. Well, if you've listened to this programme long enough, you'll know that. Israel has no right to exist. I don't believe any country has any right to exist. And I've said before on this particular programme, Israel's only claim to legitimacy is a biblical promise. We've heard this time and time again. Unto thy seed have I given this land, from the river of Egypt unto the great river, the Euphrates. God talking to Abraham, of course. There's no moral case whatsoever for the existence of Israel, whatsoever. I could spend 20 to 25 minutes talking about the Sykes-Picot Agreement. I could spend a lot of time talking about the illegal sharing of the spoils of the Ottoman Empire, the illegal Balfour Declaration, and the ethnic cleansing that went on, carried out by Israeli terrorist groups, the Stern Gang, the Haganah, and so on. They got rid of 800,000 Palestinians out of Israel between 47 and 49, is that right? Something like that. It has no right to exist. Legally, it shouldn't be there. But I'm going to qualify that by saying, as I've said a million times over the years, no state has a right to exist, and every state was born out of bloodshed and was born out of, well, it was born out of crimes, great crimes, crimes against humanity, racism. But I'm not going to get into that now. I'm going to get into this tomorrow. I wanted to cover it today, but we don't have time to cover it today. I'm going to get into it tomorrow, the whole anti-Semitic thing. And I'm going to get into that with Christopher Bolland tomorrow on the programme, so look out for that. I'm going to leave that right there and move along. I'm conscious of the clock and of the time. It's exactly 17 minutes past the hour. We told you on Friday that Tony Blair was considering a return to British politics. This was interesting. RT News went out on the streets of London over the weekend to ask Londoners predominantly what they made of Blair and a possible return to frontline politics by him.
I think there are a lot of question marks about him personally on from a distance, from my own perception. I don't personally know if I'd trust him.
What do you make of Tony Blair saying that he might return to British politics? Because the centre ground
help us all if he does. He's done enough harm as it is. So he seriously messed up the Middle East, took us to war with Iraq. We're still suffering from that. ISIS is probably a result of the strength of ISIS now in Syria and stuff is a result of what happened in Iraq. So, Lord help us, I just hope he stays out of it.
No, he's done too much damage with the war and whatnot. I don't feel that he should be coming back into politics. No chance. Too much damage already done by him. In the years that he was Prime Minister, so nah, no way. It won't help Labour in any way for him coming back.
Yeah, it might be nonsense as well. We'll watch that one closely. And today, and I know a lot of you were talking about this on social media, internet trolls who create derogatory hashtags or doctored images to humiliate others could face prosecution in England and Wales. Inciting people to harass others online, known as virtual mobbing, could also result in court action under new Crown Prosecution Service guidance. The Director of Public Prosecution said it means that the CPS would prosecute just as if offences occurred offline. But she stressed, did Alison Saunders, this didn't mean prosecutors could stifle free speech. And she kept a straight face. The BBC reports the new guidance aims to help police identify online crimes more easily. It also highlights those who post people's personal information, such as bank details, known as doxing. Now again, I'm not going to labour the point here. Spoken a lot about this. Threatening to injure, maim or sexually assault somebody is a crime already. It is an existing crime. And anybody who goes online and threatens to rape somebody is breaking the law. There's no need for any new legislation or any new powers to be given to the police or to the Crown Prosecution Service. Threatening harm to somebody is a crime that already exists. What this is about, and I'll mention this maybe to Wayne Madsen, I'll certainly be getting into this during the week's programming. What this is about is making you think that they're targeting vile, soulless, pathetic, cowardly losers who say things about people online when really they're targeting those who are working to expose the system for what it really is. That's what it's really all about. That's where this is going. I mean, if you look at the first line of that news report there, where it says, doctored images to humiliate others could face prosecution in England and Wales. Well, what about all those doctored images of war criminals like David Cameron and Tony Blair? Does that mean that somebody can be arrested? Because you've doctored an image of David Cameron and you've caricatured him and who he is and Tony Blair. Is that what this is all about? Well, of course it is, really. That's what this new guidance is really all about. Not going after idiots who threaten people online who are breaking existing laws, but going after people who are exposing the system. And I don't mean me at all, but I mean the sorts of people who come on this programme. It's exactly 21 minutes past the hour. Back in a minute with plenty more. This is your Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Welcome back. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter, richie@richieallen.co.uk. Gail tweets, does that mean cartoon caricatures in newspapers too? That's a very good question. Hubertus tweets, an offence is not a crime. Offence to offend Elizabeth, crime. Pain, loss, harm, sufferance, injury, death. Well, I know what you're getting at there. I know what you're getting at. Threatening to rape somebody is a crime. I know you're not saying that, Hubertus. But just to echo what I said already, that, of course, is a... that's a crime that exists already. Mark tweets, if there's not enough shit going on in the world, we have to watch out for clowns now. It's an interesting story, this. You might have been following this over the weekend, over the last few days. Apparently, people are dressing as clowns and jumping out at all hours of the day and night and scaring the living bejesus out of people. In fact, it's mentioned, or it's covered by BBC News Today and Channel 4 News. The police across England have been called to dozens of incidents in which pranksters dressing as clowns deliberately scare people. Apparently, this trend began in the US. A guy was arrested in Norwich over the weekend, a 30-year-old guy, after jumping out from behind a tree and terrifying a woman in a public park. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are better things to be doing than that. Right, we're going to take some music and then we're going to get our first guest on the show. I'm looking forward to getting back in touch with Wayne Madsen, who follows this from The Struts.
Thomas says, stay home, get away. I'm gone for good. Making up stories.
music from Destruct's Kiss This on the Richie Allen Show. It's exactly 27 minutes past the hour. Cracking on with it then. Lots of tweets about the trolling guidance handed down today by the Crown Prosecution Service. We'll get to some more of those tweets a little bit later on. To last night's debate though now, and let's welcome back an old friend of ours. He's a terrific journalist, a former US Navy officer, and in his time he's worked at the National Security Agency as well. In fact, his resume, we could be here quite a long time giving you his entire resume. You can check him out at Wayne Madsen Report, which is a fantastic blog, packed full of information, the sort of information that you don't get through commercial or national media sources. It's always a pleasure to welcome back Wayne Madsen to the show. Wayne, thanks for taking the call. How are you?
Good. Good to be with you.
Wayne, you know, when I didn't stay up, when I say stay up, the debate last night was late and I decided I would give it a bit of a pass and get the highlights of it or the lowlights of it on British media today. When somebody of your experience has been around as long as you, you're not an old man by any stretch of the imagination. When you see, you might be getting there. You might be getting there. A matter of perspective. But when you see two presidential, when you see the likes of Donald Trump wheeling out women to make accusations about the husband of the Democratic nominee, who also happens to be the former president of the United States, and when you hear the sort of accusations being levelled by Trump at Bill Clinton and vice versa coming across, do you have to pinch yourself, Wayne, and wonder, have you kind of segued into some sort of dream world? Because it's absolutely insane, isn't it, what we were watching yesterday?
It is, and I got a taste of it. I actually covered the Republican convention in Cleveland, and I've covered conventions in the past, and I thought I was in some sort of alternate reality. I noted that Hillary Clinton used that same term last night, alternate reality. when, you know, there were hardly any of the big time Republican celebrities at that convention. It was like, it was, you know, only the Trump people, Trump's family. and now with this debate, it was, you know, I was very quick to point out when George W. Bush was president, I believed and I still believe that George W. Bush was, for lack of a better term, I believed he was slightly retarded, mentally retarded. I still believe that. And in Trump's case, I believe this man is a certifiable lunatic. Now, the vetting process, political vetting process, should have kept George W. Bush out of the White House and Donald Trump from getting the nomination to be president. But, the political process, and I blame television for this, infotainment for this, people, in the past, we had very good means and ways to inform the public about candidates for office, and all of those, none of these exist any longer because of this propensity for infotainment.
I have to ask you this. I mentioned this in the introduction to the program today. Our news anchor mentioned about more revelations coming out about Trump, Wayne, about his conduct around women. And I'm not kissing your ass, my friend, but you've been around a bit, as we joked about a few minutes ago. You know all about the sorts of vetting, as you just mentioned there, and the powers that major institutions like the Grand Old Party and the Democratic Party would have. I can't believe, Wayne, that those Republican power brokers now running away from Trump and saying, we don't want to have anything to do with them, or with him even. They couldn't convince me, if we were here till the year 2050, that they didn't know what was going to come out about this guy's conduct. Because
certainly they, unless they were
totally. They must have known, yeah.
They knew it, and I've reported in the past, and I'm reporting once again. It's even worse than him using this language on a bus. I think it's actually kind of ironic that the of all the Bushes that brought Donald Trump down, it wasn't the ones we thought it was going to be, like Jeb. It turned out it was Billy Bush, who's Jeb's first cousin. He was the host. He's the now suspended host of Access Hollywood and the Today Show. Now putting this all in context about Trump, I reported 6 months ago that there was information about Trump actually groping his daughter, who was the 15 years old at the time, underneath the table at the Trump Grill, which is the big steakhouse, high-end steakhouse in the Trump Tower. This information came from service staff that worked in the restaurant. And now it all, you know, I mean, with all these other reports.
Did they report that way into the police?
Yeah, they did not, because they, I mean, even then, and this is over, I guess, 15 years ago, Trump was, you know, if he caught wind of any of these people talking, they would have been fired, and possibly would have followed that up with lawsuits.
But, you know, I'm going to be the devil's advocate now, Wayne, but I'm also going to be fair to Trump, much as I agree with you that the man is a raving lunatic. Trump is entitled to say that any staff at any restaurant coming out with stories about him groping his daughter, those are libelous comments to make by those people, unless they, you know, went to the police and reported it without any evidence. Now, I've known you a couple of years, and you're unimpeachable as a journalist, so I'm not having a go at you, not for a minute. But those people who say those things, you know, they need to put up or shut up, make a report and provide some evidence, or don't speak about that, because much as Trump, you know, I reckon there's a lot to answer for, that's kind of unfair to him. Would you agree with that?
Well, yeah, but we have to put it in context with the comment he made about his daughter when she was even when she was underage. And now we know about his comments about her on the Howard Stern show.
That she's hot, I think, which is not really appropriate. That,
and he also said he would date her if she wasn't his daughter. Well, everybody knows what he means by that word date. You know, you put all this in context, and I think you've got basically somebody who's a serial a sexual a groper and a sex addict. Now, he's made fun of Huma Abedin's estranged husband, Anthony Weiner, for sending out inappropriate photos of himself on social media. I think that's the pot calling the kettle black at this point in time. And in retrospect, with Bill Clinton, we know, ad nauseum, I covered the whole impeachment thing and, you know, back in the late 90s. And I mean, what Bill Clinton did and seems almost mild, not condoning people who assault women. But I thought it was also very bad form that Trump paraded the four women out at the debate. I mean, debates have really, become circus atmospheres.
Jerry Springer should really be asked to host them, shouldn't he, Wayne?
Jerry Springer, you know, any of those people. But now you see even where the campuses that they hold these debates have become a media circus in themselves. I mean, you've got all the networks there with the students milling around and brass, you know, the college bands playing. And I mean, is that the type, you know, these used to be very staid and serious affairs sponsored by the League of Women Voters. And now they become three-ring circuses.
We spoke, I think, over a year ago, and we were speculating as to whether or not Trump was a knowing or an unknowing plant put there to basically hand the election to Hillary. Now, we heard, Wayne, about a half an hour ago that she's opened an 11-point lead in the polls now. – none of this is surprising to you or surprising to me. This is the way it seems like it was, you know, preordained. It was. This is the way it was going to be laid out. Are we seeing absolutely, I suppose there's no such thing as irrefutable evidence, but as strong as it gets, evidence that this was the game plan all along. This guy's, his whole raison d'etre was to act as a stalking horse for Hillary Clinton.
It could be, because we know that the person who suggested Trump run in the first place was Bill Clinton. Bill. These were friends. The Clintons went to his wedding, to Trump's wedding. And let's put this in context. I am not for one minute criticizing a lot of the things in Trump's platform. I think his anti-globalization, anti-free trade, that is something that I agree with, and I've written about it. His points about working with Russia against the Islamic State in Syria and elsewhere, I think are on point, as opposed to what Hillary wants to do is get in a war. And even Trump's running mate, Mike Pence, we know that they don't agree now. But let's put this in context. If you are seriously running against globalization, you're running against some of the most influential and wealthiest people on the planet, George Soros and Warren Buffett and the European Union. But let's look what's happened just after Brexit. After Brexit, everybody was saying, look, you know, it looks like the anti-globalization cause is really moving ahead. And then we saw Trump get the Republican nomination. Again, people were excited. We're finally standing up against globalization. In a matter of a few months, what have we seen? We've seen the Trump campaign pretty much self-immolate, and there's a good chance he could take the Republican control of the Senate and House with him, which would give President Hillary Clinton a total mandate to do whatever she wants on trade. We also have seen, similarly, the collapse of the UK Independence Party, UKIP. You know, you've got fistfights breaking out between members of the UKIP party in Strasbourg at the European Parliament. You've got Farage having to step back in as leader because the person who became the leader resigned all of a sudden. There was a lot of people saying, look, this a few months ago, it looks like Marine Le Pen could actually be the next president of France. But now what are we seeing there? The National Front is collapsing because her father has endorsed Sarkozy, the same man who defeated the elder Le Pen in the 2007 presidential election, which has caused a real rift within the National Front. And that could mean that Hollande, the president, pro-globalist president, could be reelected, even though he's totally unpopular. So you put all this in context and you see who's winning this. And it could be, as you suggested, that Trump and other agents provocateurs were placed in these various movements to ensure that they failed.
Loads of tweets on this, unsurprisingly. Sean asks me to ask you, Richie, ask Wayne, does he think the masses, the US electorate, will shut off before the end of this circus tour? You know, that's interesting, that question, because I was wondering about that as well, Wayne. Might you see in November a record low turnout?
Yeah, that's going to happen. And look at some of the polls now. You know, they were talking about the battleground states before, that Trump was actually ahead, or he pulled even with Clinton in some of them. But now they're all lost. All the battleground states are lost. The new battleground states are safe, have been safe Republican states. Now they're talking about in play Alaska. You know, I never thought that we'd see that state in play, but it is. South Carolina, which is pretty conservative, is now in play because of this Trump collapse. Because one of the things, you know, Trump did get evangelical support, not all of them. Some had been with Ted Cruz, but, you know, they said, oh, well, we know he's the New York type, but, you know, we're gonna vote our bread and butter issues ahead of our religious issues. But imagine these evangelicals now having to explain to their kids what that P word means. Or, you know, I'm sure they know what it means, but can you imagine this was being played, all this language, without bleeps originally by CNN? And he's going to lose that evangelical base over this. So that's why South Carolina and Mississippi are now starting to only lean Republican, where they were solidly Republican before. I would not be surprised on election night to see Hillary Clinton win Texas, South Carolina, Mississippi, and Alaska, which will give her a landslide victory status. And moreover, see, Trump is bringing down a lot of Republican candidates for the Senate and House. And there's a lot of Democrats who are running for office who are really crooked. I mean, for lack of a better term, I'm reporting on one today, a guy named Jason Kander, a Democrat in Missouri, who may defeat, because of this Trump factor, the incumbent Republican Roy Blunt. Kander's been using charities to help kids, you know, that old scam, give money to help the kids, as a political slush fund worth $5 million.
He learned that from Bill and Hillary, didn't he?
Yeah, certainly. So you see what Trump's doing by him self-immolating. He's going to bring down a lot of incumbent Republicans. Not that they're great people either, but that's going to open the door for a lot of Democrats who are really, really, when it comes to ethics, very low on the scale to get in. And that's what we're seeing across the country.
We've had a tweet from Shona, and it's a good one. Does it even matter if there is a low turnout for the elections? The system is rigged, isn't it? And you and I have gotten into this in the past, Wayne. Whether we like it or not, and I came from commercial media where I used to cover local and national elections, and I used to believe that we could change the paradigm and change the future through the ballot box. But I've come to believe now that, well, not just now, but in recent years, there's absolutely no chance, because the globalists, as some people call them, the elite or the hidden hand, as others call them, they provide us with both sides of every argument and don't really care too much which side we vote for, because ultimately they're going to control the winner. And, you know, that's putting it very simply. I believe that ultimately the whole system has to be torn down. We can't change things. There aren't enough good men and women that we can get together to make a difference in any election, whether it's state, whether it's local, whether it's national, international. How do you feel about that, Wayne? I mean, you've been, you know, like me, you've come up through the system, you've worked in mainstream jobs. How do you feel about that now?
Well, yeah, I mean, you look at the elections, we see all this finagling of the elections, the vote tabulation, the registration process on election day, people not even knowing where they go to vote because they've closed the polling place with no directions on where they're supposed to go. I think it's pretty well fixed. And so therefore we don't see surprises. Look, even if Trump hadn't self-destructed over these tapes, and there's more tapes, I understand, coming out, they're going to be worse. That's not to say that he could have won this election anyway, because a lot of these states, he's running against two political establishments now, not just the Democratic Party, but the Republican Party. And I mean, a lot of Republican officials have good reason to run away from him. I think it's rather ironic that two Republican governors who have been known for groping women have come out
amazing
and taken away their endorsements. Robert Bentley, the governor of Alabama, who's under possible impeachment over a few sex scandals, including groping women in the governor's office, and Arnold Schwarzenegger, the former Republican governor of California, who got the name Gropinator. I mean, it is totally. I mean, this is like a three-ring circus, And again, something. Now, I covered, you know, I remember Watergate. I was a political science student in college when Watergate happened. And the sad thing is there are some people who are sticking with Trump. But I remember, you know, the morning Nixon decided to resign, and it took three Republicans to convince him to it was time for him to go. Barry Goldwater, House Minority Leader John Rhodes, and Senate Minority Leader Hugh Scott, and the Dean of the Senate, Barry Goldwater, told him in a White House visit, they said, it's time for you to leave. There's nobody that can tell Trump this. But even all that said and done, the morning of the resignation of Richard Nixon in August of 1974, there were two individuals standing on the steps of the Congress still supporting Richard Nixon when everybody knew he was toast. One was a rabbi named Baruch Korb, and the other one was a little-known Korean preacher at the time named Sung Myung Moon, who had started this Unification Church. And that was it. And it was really kind of pathetic. And I see people today that are still, you know, hoping that Trump can do this are basically in the same mold as Rabbi Korb and Sung Myung Moon.
Yeah, we see it in some of the U.S. independent media. It's kind of distressing, actually, because some of these people should know better. Some of these people used to advocate all the time the idea that the system is rigged and that the globalists control both sides. And then they weighed in behind Trump, and I could never understand that, why they changed their tune. Let me ask you this, Wayne, and thanks so much for your time. By the way, folks, I recommend, and my recommendations don't come cheap either, bookmark Wayne's website, which is WayneMadsonReport.com. It's a terrific resource for information. That's WayneMadsonReport.com. Wayne, a very good friend of mine in Ireland, very smart woman, very learned woman, she said something to me weeks and weeks and weeks ago, and she's the only person who said it. Now, it might not come to pass, but I thought it was an interesting idea. She said, Richie, I wonder if it really goes, you know, belly up for Trump before the election. Could we see something unprecedented? Could Obama's term be extended by a short period? I thought that was fascinating, Wayne, because I don't know enough about the US Constitution as it pertains to elections. But if Trump does go completely, you know, off the bloody reservation in the next 2 weeks with all these things coming out, would the Republicans try and get somebody in at the last minute to stand against Hillary, or could there be a postponement, Wayne?
No, the Constitution is pretty
clear, is it?
Pretty solid on all these fronts. If Trump were to, do something odd, the Rule 9 of the Republican Party rules states that he can be replaced in accordance with the wishes of the state chairman. They would actually call together a mini convention, not like the full blown one in Cleveland. And Rule 9 applies to if he died, if he declined the nomination, or otherwise. Now, otherwise, otherwise is a catch-all thing here. Otherwise, I mean, could be what if Trump were arrested for some thing? You know, I mean, obviously he would have to be dropped from the ticket, or something else happened. He stood in the middle of Fifth Avenue, and actually, like you said, he once said I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and get away with it. Well, no, he wouldn't. But if he did that, that would be otherwise. Now, the interesting aspect is, though, if he were taken off as the top of the ticket, the electors who are pledged to him, who have already been selected and you know, would have been selected in the convention process, and it's the electors you're voting for on November 8th here. And then in the middle of December, they gather and cast their vote for the person they're pledged to. If Trump, in some states, they would still have to vote for, the candidate they're pledged to. Michigan is one of them. I doubt Trump will win Michigan, but there's a few other states like that. It could happen where none of the candidates, therefore, get the 270 electoral votes necessary to be elected president, including this would be Hillary.
Hey, Wayne, sorry to interrupt you. As you're, this is really interesting stuff, by the way, and it's a real education, sincerely. But as you're talking, and just because we've only got a couple of minutes left before I've got to get out for news, of course, another possibility is that, and I know you've been writing about this, and I know you've been talking about it on radio shows, she's not well, Wayne. And this is this is serious. And, you know, again, I try and stay away from the really far out there commentators, but it's quite obvious that she's not well. What if Trump's implosion and revelations about Trump's sexual deviancy were to coincide with an absolute failure of Hillary Clinton's health? We'd be in some situation then, no?
Well, but the Democrats also have a very similar rule as the Republicans. They would do the same thing in that case. And it could go, it could be that if nobody gets a 270 electoral votes, it goes to the House of Representatives to vote for the next president. That's why if Trump brings the Republicans down in the House, he, even in all cases, he's ensuring that the next president will be a Democrat, because if the Democrats take over the House, it'll be that new House that votes for the president if no one achieves the 270 minimum electoral votes. But as far as Obama, he's out of office on January the 20th, 2017, according to the Constitution. There can be no extension of his term.
Wayne, I always enjoy chatting with you. Thanks so much. I have no doubt we'll be chatting again in November. It's WayneMadsonReport.com, folks. Bookmark Wayne's website. He's a trusted source, as far as we're concerned, for information about the US election and everything else going on there politically in DC. Thanks again, Wayne. Look after yourself.
Certainly. Certainly.
Brilliant. Bye for now. Wayne Madson on the line to us there from his home in DC. It's exactly 6 minutes to the top of the hour. Very quick break, back with more in a minute.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Join in tonight's discussion by tweeting at Richie Allen Show now.
Yes, now if you sent me emails in the last few days and you're wondering why they weren't replied to, I haven't just become rude and not replied to you. I'm having difficulty getting into my email a lot, to richie@richieallen.co.uk. But we will, in the near future, be putting together a new website. Now, that brings me to something that I was going to mention at the top of the programme, but I said I'd wait until now to do it. I mentioned on Facebook on Saturday, excuse me, that Aaron Callant, the lovely Aaron Callant, who's a great friend of ours and very important to this programme. He's been with the programme since I started it back in September of 2014. In fact, we had the idea for the programme in June of 2014 or May 2014. David had the idea. Aaron's mother died. She passed away on Friday night. And I mentioned on Saturday, and I want to say it again, we send our sincerest condolences to Aaron and his family, because they really are a lovely family. They're lovely people. And they've not had a great year. You know the way you get years sometimes? I've had years like this. We've all had years like this when people pass away and you've had some bad luck and things go generally wrong. Well, the Callan family's not had a very good year, and they're grieving now for their mother and grandmother. And I just want to send out all the best to Aaron. I doubt very much he's listening to the programme tonight. He's got obviously more important things to be doing then listening to this. But we, myself and Simon and Claire and everybody else associated with the programme, just want to say that we're thinking of Aaron, and nothing we could say will make things any better for him. But we know that he's got great people around him, and that they'll come to terms with the loss of the woman that they love so much, who goes on her onward journey now. So good luck to Aaron and to his family. Right, coming up in hour two, I'm delighted to say, I got in touch late this afternoon. It was a weird day today. There was a lot going on, and ordinarily the programme comes together very quickly, but it was a weird day today. But I was looking, I was chasing our second hour guest. She's a lady called Madeline Hoffman, who's been, or is, an executive director of the New Jersey Peace Action. It's New Jersey Peace Action. It's a peace, an anti-war group. She's also been a peace activist for 16 years. Now, I came across a video of Madeline passionately explaining what she believes is really going on in Syria. And what Madeline believes is really going on in Syria is what I passionately believe is really going on in Syria. She visited Syria along with a delegation in the summer. And in August, there was a press conference, which I only saw a clip from in the last few days, where, as I said, she passionately gave her testimony, her honest account of what she believed was really going on in that country. So Madeline is going to join the programme in a few minutes' time. So, of course, as usual, tweet at Richie Allen Show, email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Let me know what you're thinking, and I will put questions and points of view to Madeline when she joins me. I am going to take news at the top of the hour. Taking us there is Eric Clapton.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. A new poll has given Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton an 11-point lead over her rival Donald Trump. The NBC Wall Street Journal findings come in the wake of a leaked tape recording of the Republican candidate boasting about groping women. Kevin McAleese has more from Washington.
This is Clinton's biggest lead in a national poll over the real estate tycoon since last September. The polling was conducted immediately after the release of an audio tape which captured Donald Trump making sexually aggressive remarks against women. And there was more for the GOP to worry about, as 49% said they wanted Democrats to control Congress, compared with 42% who wanted the Republicans to maintain control.
Meanwhile, Washington's top Republican lawmaker says he will no longer publicly defend Donald Trump. Speaker of the House of Representatives Paul Ryan says he will instead focus on defending Republicans fighting to keep their seats in Congress. Nina Maria Potts reports.
After cancelling a Trump campaign rally over the weekend, Speaker Paul Ryan says he'll no longer campaign for the Republican candidate and won't try to defend him. But after some consideration of the fallout of a lewd video in which Trump discusses using his celebrity status to get away with sexual assault, Ryan has decided not to withdraw his endorsement, but instead will focus on helping Republicans defend seats in Congress, which have in many cases been made vulnerable because of party association with Donald Trump.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon says a massive response is needed in Haiti after it was struck by Hurricane Matthew. The storm left approximately 900 people dead and completely demolished entire towns in the country. The United Nations has issued an emergency appeal for $120 million in aid. Ban Ki-moon said in total, at least 1.4 million people are in need of help. The Nobel Prize for Economics has been awarded to UK-born Oliver Hart and Finland's Bengt Holmström for their work on contract theory. The pair will share a prize of just under $1 million. FSN's Ollie Barrett has the details.
The Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences says the work by the pair has helped the understanding of real-life contracts and institutions and has laid an intellectual foundation for policy on issues like bankruptcy law and political constitutions. They worked separately, based in the US, coming up with systems to work out whether public sector workers should be on fixed salaries and whether providers of public services should be state or privately owned. They beat other frontrunners to the prize, including the new chief economist at the World Bank, Paul Romer, and Olivier Blanchard, the former chief economist at the IMF. Ollie Barrett, London.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you, Rebecca Foster. It's exactly 3 minutes past the hour. This is your Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. Of course, live on Alternate Current Radio. Check out their chat room at alternatecurrentradio.com. Very vibrant chat room there. Lots of chat going on. We're on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester. Europe's most listened to independent radio show by a country mile. We're proud of that. We're not bragging. We're proud of it because we are independent. We're not for sale here. Our opinions are our own. Do tweet at Richie Allen Show. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Very excited about chatting with Madeline Hoffman. Madeline joins me in a couple of minutes' time. Remember, tweet me. Don't email me. I keep saying email me. Don't email me. Can't get through to the emails. And tell me what you're thinking. I'll tell Madeline and I'll tell everybody else. Back in a minute.
You're listening to The Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
7 minutes past the hour. George Benson, Give Me the Night on the Richie Allen Show. Loads and loads and loads of tweets about so many different things. The trolling guidance from the Crown Prosecution Service. A lot of tweets still coming in on that as well. I'm going to have the email sorted out. I don't know what's going on with the email. But Twitter is better at the moment. So it's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. And I'll be delighted to hear from you. We're very excited about our next guest. We love introducing you to new people. I was sent a video of her and others whom were part of a peace delegation who went to Syria in the summer. And as I mentioned earlier on, she gave an account of what she found in Syria, which tallies with what I've heard from others who've gone to Syria and with what I believe myself. And she spoke about the reasons she feels Syria is in the mess that it's in now. She's an executive director of New Jersey Peace Action. In fact, she's been a peace activist for 16 years. I'm delighted to welcome to the programme Madeleine Hoffman. Madeleine, thanks for taking the call. How are you?
I'm fine, Richie, but let me just say up front, when I went to Syria, I went as an individual, not in organizational capacity. So everything I'm saying and everything I'll report on, I'm speaking as an individual, but longtime peace activist for the last 16 years.
Fantastic. And you did tell me that today. You said that you were there for yourself.
Yes.
And that you were your opinions were your own.
Yes.
Fascinated to see the press conference, Madeleine, and delighted with what you were saying. Give us an idea. What did you expect to find when you headed off to Syria? And what did you find?
Well, those are two very interesting questions, because what I expected to find, I really don't know. What I was hoping to find was an alternative view to what was going on in Syria, one that would counter what I had been hearing from Western media sources for a very long time. So I really didn't know. I knew I was going into a war zone, so I didn't know what that would be like. I didn't know if I would be afraid every moment of every day that we were there. I didn't know, you know, what life would be like in Damascus since the country of Syria is engaged in a war. So I really didn't have expectations, except that I knew that we would be, the U.S. Peace Council had arranged for the delegation to meet with people from all different parts of society in Syria, from, you know, some members of parliament, government ministers, student organizations, women's organizations, people, the Grand Mufti, Catholic bishops. The list of people we met with is very, very long. And so I was excited about hearing from these different kinds of people and learning from them what life was like on a daily basis in Syria. And what I did find was a situation that had U.S. and Western mitts all over it, much more than I had thought of before I went. That there in the West, what we hear about mostly on the media is about Syrian President Assad, and we hear about one atrocity after another. We hear about Russians with a design on Syria. So we hear it really skewed in that direction, instead of hearing about what's going on in Syria from the standpoint of what the U.S. and Western interests are doing there, how we got involved there, and how we're creating or helping, really basically the initiators of a very big mess. And so, I mean, I didn't know, honestly, that the U.S. and NATO had imposed sanctions on Syria. So that was something that was a surprise to me, that really showed how serious, I guess, the West is at trying to turn the people of Syria against Assad. And I do need to say also up front that I'm not saying, and none of us is saying, that Assad is the leader that anyone and or everyone here would pick. It's just not our job to do it. It's the Syrian people's job to pick who their leader is. So what I'm saying has nothing to do with what I think about Assad as a leader per se, but what I think about countries in the Middle East and their ability and need to determine for themselves who their leaders should be.
When you arrive there, first of all, I think it's a very brave thing to do. And when I've had guests on before who've been out there, I mean that sincerely. I'm not paying lip service to that. It takes an enormous amount of courage to go where you know that some pretty heinous things are happening. And yes, there are some incredibly bad people there, militants, jihadists, doing extremely disgusting things. So I think it takes an awful lot of courage. I suppose your curiosity, Madeline, because you've been around peace activism for, you know, the best part of two decades. I imagine you were very, very keen to just meet regular people, people that you could trust had an opinion that wasn't informed by a relationship with either the government or by the alleged rebels. What were you finding when you were meeting people? What were they keen to tell you? Because I could imagine that Syrian residents, Syrian people, when they meet somebody like you coming from the US, I guess they're probably very keen to tell you what it is they think about what's going on. What were they communicating to you?
Well, it's interesting because there also was, not amongst the people we spoke to so much, but friends of the people we spoke to, there was a skepticism on their part about meeting with an American delegation because they didn't have much faith that either we would be willing to understand or able to understand. And even if we were, then, you know, what kind of influence or effect could we have on our government back in the United States? So there was a little bit of skepticism, to be sure. It was also on our part an appreciation that despite the fact that the United States had been involved or is involved in this war in Syria, that people were willing to talk to us, and not only willing to talk to us, despite the skepticism on the part of a few, there was a warmth and hospitality that I guess is kind of, you know, what you expect from Arab countries and in the Muslim world, a welcoming and an embrace of people who are interested in learning more about their societies and their countries. But what we heard from, we heard a couple of things over and over again from the people we met with. One is that these sanctions I mentioned are just crippling the Syrian people. And we know, as in the United States, we've seen the United sanctions against Iraq and sanctions against Iran. We remember Madeleine Albright way back when answering the question of like 500,000 children who had died in Iraq under sanctions, being asked if that was a price worth paying, and she didn't make too many friends in the Arab Muslim world by saying, oh yeah, in order to unseat Saddam Hussein, it's a price well worth paying. We know that sanctions really only hurt the innocent people of a country, the innocent civilians, and not if they're designed to hurt the leadership. It rarely happens. So we heard from the chambers of industry, from some of the businessmen and women, we heard how sanctions were making it difficult for them to run their factories and their businesses because certain parts couldn't get through. And if the parts got through, then people to train them, train workers on how to use those parts or those, you know, components of a machine, they weren't available. And the people from these, from the chambers of industry were desperate, really, to keep their factory doors open and to keep people employed, because if they didn't do that, couldn't keep people employed, then there was always the possibility that one of these outside mercenary forces, jihadists, as you had spoken about earlier, could come up to them and offer them some money. And, you know, if you're desperate enough to put food on your table, you'll take money from anyone. So the people in business were talking about the sanctions and their impact on the factories. People at the University of Damascus were talking about the sanctions and the impact on education, so that students in Syria who wanted to study abroad were no longer able to do that. There was a time, there was a lively exchange between Syria and other countries where Syrian students would go to study, and that has stopped now, and Syrian students in the United States aren't going back home.
Can I just jump in sure. quickly, Madeline? This is great stuff. And these people you were speaking to, the industrialists and the educators and the academics, they didn't blame the Assad government. Those who you spoke with were, they absolutely knew where this was coming from.
Absolutely. There was no blame on the Assad government from them. We did speak to nonviolent opposition folks who, prior to 2011, when this all started, they had serious issues with Assad in regard to, I mean, we hear this in almost any country, right, where there's corruption in government. So they had concerns about corruption in government. They had concerns about democracy. They wanted Syria to become even more secular. So they had concerns. But once the battles began, even the nonviolent opposition folks said, I think our best bet is to unify under this government, our best bet at protecting the sovereignty of the Syrian people. So despite differences with the Assad government, many made the decision that it was best to unify. And when we spoke to the clerics, when we spoke to the bishops and the Grand Mufti, they spoke about and also showed us places north of Damascus where Christian shrines, holy shrines, had been damaged, not by the Assad government, according to them, but by the outside mercenary forces funded by countries like Turkey, Qatar, the United States. And so they showed the Christians and Muslims alike said, when asked how many Muslims are there in Syria or how many Christians are there in Syria, they both answered the same way. We don't look at life that way. We don't look at ourselves that way. We're 23 million Syrians, so there's 23 million Christians and there's 23 million Muslims, and we're united around this.
How amazing that is. I want to do a very quick recap. A lot of interest in this. Madeline Hoffman is on the line. Madeline went as part of the US Peace Council to visit Syria. She was representing herself. She went independently. But I did mention she's also an executive director of New Jersey Peace Action, which is hugely important group in the US, organizing peace activism events for many years. We know a lot of the same people, Madeline, I reckon. People like David Swanson, people like Medea Benjamin, Leah
yes.
Bulger. We know all the same people,
yes.
you and I.
Yes.
They've been on this program before. Now, Madeline,
I'm in good company.
You're in good. No, you know you are in good company. They're in good company as well, by the sounds of it. Now, you, one of the things, programs like this get accused of being very, very subjective, and I suppose we are, because if we set out to find an alternative viewpoint to that which is presented in the mainstream media, well, then of course we're being subjective. I will get emails tomorrow from people who say, guys like you, you don't tell the truth. This guy, Assad, there was a genuine opposition to him, and his army, whether he gave the orders or not, were willfully targeting the Syrian people, and that's been happening for a number of years. They mentioned the chemical weapons. They mentioned mustard gas, chlorine gas, and all of this. Now, I don't believe this, Madeline, because I don't believe that the Assad government would have anything to gain by doing that. But to be the devil's advocate, what did you learn of that when you were in Syria? Is there any evidence to support that the Syrian army, the Syrian Arab army, has behaved inappropriately and has committed any of these crimes?
Well, I don't feel qualified to answer that in terms of what I saw while I was there and what people said while I was there. But I'm not going to answer that question directly. But what I will say is that the Syrian Arab army, people we saw were not running away from the Syrian Arab army. So there was no fear. They were actually very supportive of the Syrian Arab army. I've heard from Dr. Bashar al-Jafari, who's the permanent Syrian ambassador to the United Nations, there are a lot of conflicting stories about where those chemical weapons came from. Reporters like Seymour Hersh, who said that one of the reasons that the United States didn't attack in Syria when that so-called red line was drawn was because there wasn't sufficient evidence to pin that on the Assad government. There may be some things that have been done in Syria that would not stand up to scrutiny. I don't know about that. But what I do know for sure is, and this is what I say when I speak here in the United States, I said that we need to open the window on what the United States is doing over there and what the jihadi groups are doing there and the support for ISIS and the support for al-Nusra. And because I don't think that the people in the U.S. really know what's going on with that. And, 15 years after the September 11th attacks, when we're supposed to be fighting a war on terror, to find out that we're fighting a war using terror groups to unseat yet another sovereign, a ruler in another sovereign nation in the Middle East, that to me was just impossible to accept. And so that's one of the main reasons I'm speaking out, that I want people to at least have another view about what's going on and look at what the United States is doing, not only in Syria, but what the United States did in Libya, what the United States did in Iraq, what, who knows, might happen in other parts of the Middle East. We need to put the brakes on it. And that's what I see as part of my role in all this, is to help to put the brakes on it, regardless of the actions of one particular leader in one particular country.
It's an amazing thing, what you've got to do is you've got to tread a very fine line, and we're very well aware of that. When you're dealing with diplomats and when you're dealing with politicians, you've got to be very careful what you say and how you say it. And it's very important that people understand that listening, because you might have some very, very strong opinions about things, but you've got to at times keep those to yourself. Do you think the Syrian people you encountered, do you think they were very much aware that the intelligence agencies of Western so-called democracies were responsible for creating and unleashing the Wahhabi lunatics that are committing the crimes that we've seen in Syria over the last 5 years? Are the Syrians aware of that?
Oh, they're very much aware of that. In fact, when we spoke to the Grand Mufti, he said, and this was echoed by other people, I'm using him as an example here, but what he said was echoed by many. He said that a fire was started here in Syria, and that if the fire is not put out in Syria, it threatens to engulf the whole world. And he was talking about these terror attacks. In the United States, if I use the word terror or terrorism, it feeds into an anti-Islam strain here, an Islamophobic strain here. So I tend to shy away from using words like terror and terrorist. But they do apply in Syria, for sure, to these groups and what they've been doing to the Syrian people. But he said, and when we went July 24th through July 30th. There had been incidents in Brussels. There had been incidents in Nice and in France, a couple of different incidents. So I understood what he was saying, that if we don't stop the terror and the growth of terror groups in Syria, and if the United States and the West don't acknowledge what they're doing with that in the West, we won't be able to stop it. If we can't acknowledge it, then we see the spiral of violence. We could see how it just continues and continues and continues, and we need to put the brakes on in Syria. And now, of course, there's even one more threat looming on the horizon, and that is the tension, the ever-increasing tension between the United States and Russia. We don't need to relive that all over again, I hope, and the potential of a nuclear confrontation that would come about between those two countries.
It's interesting you say that. Yeah, former U.S. Assistant Treasury Secretary Paul Craig Roberts said on this program a couple of weeks back that we are entering a kind of a new Cold War, but a more dangerous yes. Cold War than one we've seen before. I'm just going to read a few tweets. Madeline Hoffman is on the line. Martin tweets, is Madeline aware of the huge global doubt about the official version of September the 11th? I suppose that's even more pertinent now, of course, because Congress overruled Obama's veto against the families of those who died on the day, who might want to go after the Saudis, which is very interesting. I was going to read a few more of these. There's so many tweets coming in here. A lot of interest in it. Stevie tweets, Stevie G, the US and her allies are at war with Syria. Disinformation and propaganda against Assad is expected. The bigger issue, as Madeline says, is World War III. Chris tweets, may not be perfect, Assad may not be perfect, but he didn't start all the craziness there now. He is and was trying to defend his country there. Sean McTee tweets, it's a war of terror. Yes. I think what he means is to terrorise people so that those Western NATO countries basically get their own way. Luga tweets, to undermine the East, to steal resources, to create Western fear, the New World Order, historical interests, and eugenics, says Luga. So many of these coming in. Sean McDonald tweets, Richie, thank Madeline for honest reporting of the proxy mercenary infiltration fighting people of a sovereign state. So many of those coming in, folks. Keep them coming in. It's that Richie Allen Show. And Faisal tweets, I'm very glad that Madeline is concentrating on the crippling sanctions, which is the major civilian atrocity in this war. Often underreported, Madeline, but you'll know, of course, the civilian impact of sanctions on Iraq, because you mentioned it. 500,000 children and millions more people starved out of existence in Iraq because of the sanctions in that country. That's a very good point as well.
Yes, yes. May I add a couple of things, Richie?
Of course, we have plenty of time. You've got as long as you want. We're going to the top of the air, Madeline. You stay with us as long as you want.
Okay, I would be glad to do that. I just wanted to mention, you had asked me a little while ago about Assad and the atrocities. Whether we saw any evidence of that, and you mentioned Saudi Arabia a couple of minutes ago, and it reminded me about one of these, where is the outrage coming from internationally in regard to Saudi Arabia, who is fighting a proxy war on behalf of the United States in Yemen? And just recently, the bombing of the funeral hall in Yemen, where anywhere from 150, all the reports are different, but many civilians were killed in that bombing. And I don't hear the outcry over that. And so we did try here in this country. There was a move to try to get the U.S. Senate to block the latest arms deal to Saudi Arabia of $1.15 billion, but that did not succeed. So we really need to look at, again, we need to look at the U.S. role throughout the Middle East and the U.S. role in destabilizing and using terror groups to accomplish regime change. And I also just wanted to mention seems for sure that the people tweeting you understand this, but we look at it, the U.S. Peace Council delegation and the U.S. Peace Council, it's illegal under international law, this whole idea of regime change. Article 2 of the United Nations Charter makes it illegal because Syria is a sovereign state. So this idea that we, the United States, can intervene wherever it wants to in the Middle East and use whatever force it deems useful or helpful, you know, doesn't sit right with me at all, and it shouldn't, and obviously doesn't sit right with the Syrian people and many people in the Middle East. Many people have been victimized by it. And yes, I am aware of the global doubt of the official story of 9/11. You know, being even just coming back from Syria and speaking similarly to the way I'm speaking now, the media here is ready to jump and pounce and slam us for being pro-Assad rather than trying to do honest reporting, as some of your listeners have said. And so it really matter if I said that I like the hair on Assad's head, somebody would say, oh, you're so pro-Assad, and then not listen to anything else that I would say. So it's...
just the nature of the media, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very... And this was... you asked me at the very beginning what was I expecting and what did I find? I probably shouldn't have been so naive about this, but I didn't expect to put my foot into the middle of a vicious media war over here. I thought, okay, you went to Syria. I went to Syria in a war zone. It's something worthy of respect, if nothing else. And that didn't quite happen.
Well, my background is in commercial and national media, and I try and tell, not you, because you know this better than me, but I try and educate people sometimes who don't know this. But the same companies who manufacture these weapons, the Lockheed Martins of the world, the British Aerospace of the world, they largely are subsidiaries owned by companies which also own the media. And people don't understand this. And I know you understand it, but I've met other activists and they've been really scolded by it. They can't believe it. I just told the truth. I just went somewhere and I saw something and I told the truth. And I'm like, well, listen, you have to understand, these people, they're all owned by the same, not so, it used to be a hidden hand, not so hidden hand now. I'm like, okay, right, okay, I get it now. That's the way it is. Madeline Hoffman is on the line. Loads I want to get into with Madeline. On Yemen, Angela tweets me, Richie, you did mention at the very beginning of the programme that Reuters have reported, and this is disgusting, Madeline, you know, just going back to what you said about what's happening in Yemen and the absolute carnage there. Reuters have discovered through a Freedom of Information Act that US government lawyers, their own lawyers, advised them last year that it was co-belligerent under international law. They should not continue to sell weapons to the Saudis that might be used against Yemeni civilians. Their own lawyers told them they shouldn't do it. And just to mention something else which is important, tonight Yemeni people will be bombed by the crazy, lunatic Saudi regime. If you want the regime, there's the regime. And they will be doing that with British military officers standing watch in the control rooms, making sure that they get the best usage of weapons sold to them by this British government. And that's not a conspiracy theory. Our officers are there making sure they do it properly. It's an absolute crime against humanity. 2 points, Madeline, that you might want to get into. I've had a tweet from George, and George says, Richie, remind your listeners that the United Nations said in 2009 and in 2010 that Syria was meeting all of its Millennium Development Goals. That the United Nations was happy about Assad's movement towards a more fair democracy in that country. And also, I've been asked to remind our listeners that the former French Foreign Minister, Roland Dumas, has been speaking on French television in the last 2 or 3 years to say that when he was in London in 2009, British intelligence agents said to him something big was going to go down in Syria. Back as far as 2008, 2009, they decided to do something in Syria. This is the thing, Madeline, isn't it? All the information is out there if people want to find it.
Well, yes, and you know that on a similar note, that retired General Wesley Clark back in 2007, I believe, as kind of reporting on what the neoconservatives were planning to do, he mentioned a list of seven countries that were on the neoconservatives' list as countries that would undergo regime change. Libya, Iraq, and Syria was also on that list. I think Sudan, Somalia, and a couple of others. But Syria was on that list of the United States on the U.S. agenda as early as 2007. One of the things we saw, because we met with the Minister of Health, and we talked to some faculty and administrators at the University of Damascus, we saw that the government, the Assad government, was in fact still trying to deliver healthcare, universal healthcare, free universal healthcare. Now, I've mentioned the sanctions before. The sanctions were hurting the delivery of healthcare because some, like child immunizations, weren't coming through. Some chemotherapy drugs weren't coming through. Some dialysis machine filters weren't coming through. So the Assad government was still trying to deliver this universal health care under very difficult conditions. And also in education, the education was free from beginning to through high school and then university, and then virtually free for medical school. So there was a lot, there was more, I think this surprised me, really, that there was more, the role of the government was bigger in some ways than even in the United States, where private companies have taken over a good chunk of the healthcare industry, and also in university, and the cost of university are sky high, and a lot of students come out of university with debt that they won't pay off for many years after.
For years after. And we're back to the revolving door again, because again you're touching on an aspect of this conspiracy. And conspiracy shouldn't be a dirty word, because when you have evidence of a conspiracy, you should talk about it. We know that the country has been deliberately destabilised by Western intelligence agencies. And we also know that just behind those intelligence agencies are some of the biggest global corporations ever, who want to get into these countries if, in the event that, you know, Saddam Hussein is removed, Gaddafi was removed, as we've talked about, as you talked about at that press conference. They want in then, don't they, Madeline? They want into these countries. So forget about your free healthcare and your universal education from now on, because we're going to take control of that. It's all a part of it, right?
Yeah, I would say so. Maybe not, you know, I don't know, conspiracy or just, hey, neoliberalism itself requires that a lot of this stuff get taken care of by corporations, and in its way, having that kind of setup within a country, especially Syria being secular, independent in the Middle East, that's a threat too. It's a threat to the other way of another way of life, if you will, and not necessarily. I mean, corporate control versus government control is an argument we can have forever. And the other thing in this case too, in Syria, I think what happened in Iraq and what happened in Libya should give everyone pause, because when and if the rightful leader is toppled, who comes in to take over? Iraq is still, there's still unrest and instability. Libya is still the same after dismantling quite a you know, an advanced country, advanced level country for the Middle East, as I understand it. And who would take over in Syria? Would it be al-Nusra? Would it be Daesh? And it makes no sense unless you have this desire for controlled chaos or creative chaos so that somebody else can come in and pick up the pieces. And, you know, so I agree. I'm in agreement with you there, Richie.
Good stuff. Loads of questions, loads of comments coming in. Faisal got back in touch to say, Richie, remember, all casualties in an illegal invasion are civilian casualties. There are no legitimate targets in Yemen. He's absolutely right. There are no legitimate targets in Yemen at all.
Right.
I'm going to bring up the NGOs because I've been doing this type of program now for a number of years. And I got out of commercial media and commercial radio because I was sickened by what we couldn't report on, Madeline. Now, I'm no martyr. You know, I'm no, I'm no great journalist or great saint. None of that at all. But I did. I was disgusted by what I saw as the increasing concentration of media in the hands of fewer and fewer people. I saw it in my own country, Ireland, and I didn't like it. A couple of times I was prevented from covering a story at a radio station I worked at, and it made me sick to my stomach, so I walked away. Now, I've learned over the last few years, and I was very sceptical about this at first, but a lot of the so-called peaceful revolutions that we've seen in countries, Tunisia, in Egypt and elsewhere, they can actually be traced back to NGOs interfering and stirring up trouble. And those NGOs can be traced back to George Soros. What do you think of that? Now, a number of our listeners have asked me to bring this up, and his direct interference in some of these countries by stirring up these colour revolutions. Now, not on behalf of himself, obviously, but on behalf of his government and the other governments, you know, the other usual suspects, France, Britain, and of course Israel. What do you think of when Soros' name comes up?
Yes, well, it's he obviously has a hand in what's going on around the world. I had a response to you, and I got distracted, specifically within Syria, the role of outside money. I guess, you know, we've got to look at the NGOs, and we also have to look at organizations like USAID and other organizations that are sent in or go into a place that is part of the United States political or military and political agenda, to try to get something going, to try to reach out to people who might want to ally with the United States. And I guess it all goes back to the Project for a New American Century that kind of laid out a plan for dealing with anyone anywhere around the world that might want to resist the United States and the United States agenda. So kind of, you know, are talking about U.S. military and economic might and trying to follow that into places around the world. I don't know. I know some people in Tunisia. I've been in Tunisia also, and I think there's a lot of independent thinkers in Tunisia who are resisting some of that kind of neoliberal ideology, not idealism. It's part of the tentacles, I guess, if you will.
We're talking with Madeline Hoffman, folks. Great to have her on the show today. And I'm delighted that she came on at short notice as well. Terrific what she did going to Syria with an open mind as part of a delegation. She went as part of the US Peace Council, met a lot of people there, met a lot of officials, met a lot of Syrian men and women, and formed a picture of what's really happening there, and had the courage to come out and say that the mess there, and the mess, of course, doesn't really describe what it is, because you know, maybe hundreds of thousands of people maybe are dead. Millions more have had to leave. Yeah, exactly. Millions more have had to leave the country. And she's come out very clearly and said, look, what we have here is the Syrian government and its people trying to fight a barbarous lunatic fringe that has been created, funded, armed and trained by Western intelligence agencies. That takes a bit of courage, that, to say that. When you left it, Madeleine, how do you walk away from seeing that? I mean, you must have had a pretty heavy heart when you set sail for home again. How did you feel when you left it?
Oh, well, that's quite the question, Richie. I felt like I had, well, in some ways, I mean, I've been an activist most of my adult life. So at this point in time, you'd think that my naivete would have been gone a long time ago, because I've seen a lot dealing with opposing different wars and being involved in a lot of struggles like this. But I really felt like my naivete was gone completely, because I saw the United States involved in this country and in Syria in a way that just boggled my mind. It went beyond anything I had seen before. And I also felt, because the people in Syria appealed to us one after another, appealed to us to do something about what we saw, to try to do something about what we saw. So I felt a tremendous responsibility to speak out about what I saw, but not only speak out, but try to do something to change the U.S. foreign policy on this, because the people I met, there were many very just wonderful people who were still trying to go about their lives as if things were normal. We took a van up to Malula and Sednaya, two towns north of Damascus, and we saw these holy shrines and this beautiful church. And we were coming back, and we got a flat tire on the way. And so our van was stuck in the middle of a highway, and the people from the Syrian Arab Army came running down the hill to help change the tire. And meanwhile, we were off the road a bit, and we were standing on a little patio, and all of a sudden there was a home right behind where we were. The window opened. There was a man and his dog and his wife, and they were looking at us, and they said, "Why don't you come on in? Come on in. We'll give you some tea."
Yeah.
I mean, they're totally open to us and not at all afraid of, you know, the Syrian Arab Army doing what they needed to do to our van. And, you know, it's just the people wanting to be, just the warmth of humanity there, coupled with what I saw about how the United States was involved in destabilizing that country, and the plea and the urging that people gave us to, you know, people urging us to do something about it when we came home. I haven't been able to lose any, I haven't lost much of that, much of those feelings. I've been back now for a couple of months, and I still feel that urgency and that need to do something. Despite having to deal with, you know, the kind of welcome and reception we got when we got back home, which isn't only, as we said earlier, some of it was embracing, but a lot of it was not.
But don't worry about that, because there is a growing and an increasing presence of an independent media which is operating online. Sometimes it's offering, yes, it's operating digitally on FM frequencies, but we're reaching greater and greater audiences, and they must be worried about that, Madeleine, because, you know, they're going after the independent media in this country. I'm hearing nasty little rumours that this particular programme might have to be, you know, Ofcom compliant, which is the British Media Regulatory Authority. And again, they wouldn't be doing that if we weren't reaching greater numbers of people. They don't want us doing it, but that's a good thing, you know, because we're there to put out these stories. You know, the world is all the better for having you in it. I don't say that too often to my guests, but I really mean that. I'm delighted that you went out there. I'm delighted that you do what you do. And I've said to some of my listeners before, you know, you know what's happening. I know what's happening. We might, I doubt it, but we might disagree as to why it's happening, but that doesn't matter. The fact is it's happening. You know, our governments are committing these unspeakable war crimes around the world. Let's put a stop to it, and then let's figure out why they were doing it. I'm delighted you came on, Madeline. I'm going to give you the last word on it, and then we're going to swiftly move on, because we're going to be running out of time very quickly. You have the last word, 30 seconds. And once again, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Richie. Thank you so much. And thank you to all the listeners for your thoughtful tweets and comments. I would just urge that you look at the United States or U.S. Peace Council Facebook page, because a lot of the things that we've been talking about are posted on the Facebook page. Our Facebook page has gotten some 20,000 views in a very short period of time. The U.S. Peace Council is planning to do to work in unison with other groups in the United States. So we're not they're not going to sit quietly on having organized this delegation. So to keep up with the latest, check out the U.S. Peace Council Facebook page and keep doing what you're doing to speak the truth and speak and stand up to these imperial powers.
I've just tweeted the link to the page, and I'm urging our listeners to like the page. As Madeline already said, they've got over 20,000 likes there, which is wonderful. So like the page and find out more about the U.S. Peace Council. Madeline, anytime you want to come back on the program, drop us a line.
All right. Thank you, Richie. And if you care to forward to me any of the tweets, or maybe I should follow you. I should follow you on Twitter and I can see the tweets, right?
Exactly, yeah. Because when you're on Twitter, all you got to do is put Richie Allen Show without any spaces, all one word, and you can see what people are tweeting there.
Okay, I will do that. And thank you so much, Richie.
It was an honour. Thanks, Madeline. Madeline Hoffman on the line to us there. Absolutely wonderful stuff. Courageous. You got to love that, you know. And I did eventually get my email open. And there's always one or two people who'll say they want to split hairs with people. You know, because, I might disagree with Madeline as to why this is really happening. And like I said, we might do. I might have a very strong opinion about why this is happening. And Madeline might disagree with that. It doesn't matter. It's happening. Right now, it's happening. And it must be stopped. And I love groups like that. I mean, I could have spoken to her about the debate last night. And we did chat today, but we didn't get into the debate and the politics of it. But I guess, listening to her there, she'd be very, I suppose, very much, her thinking might be very much in line with mine about, as concerns the futility of engaging with the electoral process. But maybe it wouldn't be. Maybe it wouldn't be. Right, look, I'm going to take some music. That's what I'm going to do. Here's some music. Some music. This is Def Leppard on the Richie Allen Show, 5 minutes to the top of the hour. Yeah. Just to clear something up there, Def Leppard and Armageddon it on the Richie Allen Show. Obviously, it's hugely important to talk about on the programme with learned guests why this is really happening. Of course it is. We'll continue to go down those roads. But when we're dealing with people who work for peace organisations or work for themselves or are investigators and are telling you this is what's happening, the United States and Britain and Israel and France are destroying a country by fueling, arming and funding terrorists. That's a wonderful thing. We're not going to split hairs with those people as to why it's happening. I should be more specific about that. Of course, we're going to speculate on this programme about why it's really happening. And we're going to go down avenues that most of the independent media won't go down, don't want to go down, as to the what is really behind this, what's really controlling it. Again, areas that much of the independent media, or all of it maybe, doesn't want to go down for fear of, well, for fear of ridicule, for fear of embarrassment, for fear of failure, for fear of being labelled. But we'll continue to do that. So we're not ignoring that. But there are times to get into it and there are times not to get into it. And this was the time not to get into it, I believe. Right, that's it for the programme. Stay tuned, though, because coming up after me, there's a wonderful healing meditation from the lovely Kim Hutchison from livingasyoursoul.com. It's a healing meditation called Receiving Your Soul's Desires for Your Most Powerful Life Path. And that's coming up in around about 3 minutes' time. Thanks so much for listening to the programme. Thanks to my producer, Claire, to Simon Stewart. And spare a thought for our friend Aaron Calland and his family. Until tomorrow, bye for now. We have all the time.